This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Northwest Safe. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Dom, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
Things are looking worse and worse and worse for Governor Jay Inslee's presidential delusion. We say you can't make this up because we didn't think you can get worse than 1% support in the polls. It turns out you can. You can get less than 1% support in the polls. Despite going on MSNBC and CNN many times this morning, he went on Fox News. Despite all of these media appearances, all of the campaigning, he is less than 1%. According to a brand new Quinnipiac poll, this is a legitimate poll. To tell you how bad things are, if right now you went to Israel and you polled Representative Ilhan Omar, I think she would do better than what Jay Inslee gets in this country. Representative Ilhan Omar would do better in Jerusalem than Jay Inslee is doing here in the United States. I'm just throwing that out there. Or to quote Veep, Hanukkah polls better in Mecca.
That's saying something.
This is how bad it is. That's how bad it is. Now, he's not alone at the bottom of the poll. He's joined by others most people haven't heard of. I'm not kidding. I have no idea who Marianne Williamson or John Delaney are. They're running for president, and they're Democrats. Although, I think is Marianne Williamson, is she from The Secret? Wasn't she like an Oprah person? You can go Google that. I actually kind of think she is. She's like a guru, a spiritual guru. I have no idea, though, who these two people are, what they stand for, why they even consider themselves Democrats. Inslee, who is so unlikable in person and on TV, is trying to make global climate change his number one issue. But voters generally do not support candidates based exclusively on climate change. And if they were, let's say that is the one issue that they care deeply about, that's how they're going to determine who they're going to support for president. Wouldn't you go with someone who has an actual track record and a much stronger brand, say a Joe Biden, even a Bernie Sanders, which, by the way, both of them are leading in the polls. Beto O'Rourke comes in at number three. It's just absolutely ridiculous that Jay Inslee is wasting our tax dollars to protect him as he is on this campaign. This is bad. This is really bad. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you the link to my blog on this very topic. Let's tag him on Twitter. Let's make sure he knows what it is we think about him. Let's highlight this embarrassment. Because the sooner he is off the campaign trail, the sooner we get some of our tax dollars back, earmarked back to stuff that's happening in this state rather than his campaign. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770, and I'll go ahead and send you a link. Did you figure out who Marianne Williamson is? Was I right?
She's an author and lecturer.
And author of what?
Well, I didn't look that much into
She's a spiritual guru.
I didn't see that. Her own bio said she's been one of the most public voices since 2000.
On what?
Yeah.
I have no idea who she is. Now, we did say that Jay Inslee did Fox News today. He went on Fox and Friends, and he was asked specifically about the Green New Deal, but instead of talking about that, he pivoted for the first time, I think, in his campaign. He pivoted away briefly from the topic of global climate change to President Trump's tax returns. And he had a big announcement today, that Jay Inslee.
Well, I look forward to talking about clean energy jobs, but I do want to make some news on Fox Friends. I always want to make news on your show first. And that is, today I am challenging Donald Trump on his favorite show to release his tax returns like I did this morning, 12 years at jayinslee.com. Look, I want to say it is time for him to come clean with the American people. He's got to show what he's been hiding. And Americans deserve that truth.
Okay, just real quick. One, no one asked for your tax returns, dude. Literally no one said, we demand Jay Inslee's tax returns. No one cares about your tax returns. No one cares. By the way, I did compare my tax returns from last year to his. I had just as good of a year as he did, almost. What I love about this scam is he just said there, go to jinsley.com. You go to jinsley.com, you can't find the tax returns. You have to go to jinsley.com/tax returns to get these. Nowhere on the main page is there a clear link to get to the tax returns, because he thinks he's going to get a whole bunch of people who are just dying to know what's in his background, in his tax returns, and then, oh, look at this. This is something about global climate change. Click. And then try to get in and then get into the whole spider web of his campaign. Yeah, it's not going to happen. No one cares. Literally no one cares. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in King County?
Pierce County Councilmember Pam Roach, you'll recall about 2 months ago, maybe three, she had this idea that I was told by a whole bunch of people was controversial. The papers told me it was controversial. She basically wanted to put homeless people in an unused wing of a prison. Now, apparently, that was the worst idea ever, and people just completely criticized her. Well, now the exact same idea, almost, just a different location, is being presented in King County. I'm not hearing any of the same concerns. Perhaps maybe because Pam Roach is controversial, and a lot of people just don't like her, although her supporters seem to like her because she keeps getting put into office. But maybe it's because it's coming this time from King County Executive Dow Constantine. Maybe since he's calling for it, I guess it's okay now. Now, the thing is, I was fine, generally speaking, with Pam Roach's idea. I'm fine, generally speaking, with this idea. The county's setting up a 40-bed enhanced men's shelter at Seattle's King County Correctional Facility. Now, this is meant to deal with the more difficult cases of homelessness, which actually seems really efficient because if these people act up, you just walk them a few yards and then you throw them in an actual cell. This actually makes a lot of good sense to me. It opens this Sunday, even though virtually no one was talking about it. It opens this Sunday. The Downtown Emergency Service Center will be on-site providing behavioral health treatment, housing counseling, and employment services. The shelter's goal is to, quote, reach out to and engage people who have been on the streets longer and those with mental health and substance use issues. Again, I like this idea. I'm generally in favor of connecting people with employment services. I don't know if it's going to work in this case. I feel like we should maybe put more into the mental health and addiction services. In cases like this, if you're literally going after the people who are living out on the streets for a very long time because they're mentally ill or they're dealing with substance abuse issues, well, you can connect them with employment services all you want. They're not going to be able to keep down a job if they're still dealing with that addiction. So I'm just wondering if maybe we should put a little bit more of a focus on the mental health and the substance abuse issues. But beyond that, I love this idea. I love this idea. It's kind of costly. In the grand scheme of things, it's not that costly. Renovations, according to MyNorthwest.com, renovations to get the shelter up and running cost $2 million, including upgrades to internal systems, plumbing, sinks, fiber optic cables, paint, laundry, and more. Operations will cost about $1.8 million over the next 2 years. If this makes a dent in the homelessness problem, if we're getting some of the people who are currently on the streets who are dealing with mental illness and addiction, if we're getting them off the streets and into any kind of treatment, I'm totally okay with that. In a year, maybe 6 months, they'll have some data to suggest whether or not this idea is working. And if it's trending in the right direction, $1.8 million over the next 2 years, that is nothing. That is a drop in the bucket when it comes to the amount of money that we spend in King County and specifically Seattle dealing with homelessness. Every single time we've got people living out on the streets, we are taking money away from us anyway because we're dealing with the aftermath of what it is they're causing. The litter that they take on, the crime that they're involved in. And so $1.8 million, I hope no one looks at that and says, whoa, that's just a little bit too much. And I'm glad at least right now we're not hearing from the fringe folks who go, oh, do we really want them to be in a prison? Because then you're just telling them that their lives are not valued, that we're just putting them behind bars. You shouldn't do that. Let them sleep in the park. I'm so glad I haven't heard that yet. Now, maybe it's because the story is being dropped on a Friday that we haven't heard that yet. Maybe on Monday we'll start hearing from people like that.
Yeah, I'll pull some audio.
Yeah, but pull only the ones who talk like my impression. Oh my God. This is so bad. They should not be in jail. They should use a sidewalk as a toilet. Like, only those clips.
All right.
Because I know that that makes you feel good when I do that voice.
I like the voice.
I know you do. It's really creepy. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. One 800 465 8770. If you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies thanks to our sponsor, Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. The big weekend movie release is Hotel Mumbai. It is a graphic retelling of the 2008 terrorist attacks in Mumbai, where Islamic extremists went on a killing spree, killing over 150 people over the course of 3 days in a city that didn't have the police resources to effectively handle it. One of the spots the terrorists overtook was the Taj Hotel, a very upscale, very famous hotel in the city. There, dozens of people died, but the staff loyal to their guests stayed behind for the people who couldn't actually leave safely. Thanks to the heroism of the staff, many lives were actually saved.
I think we should try and gather whoever we can and take them to the Chambers Lounge and wait for the police to arrive.
Sir, Olga made it through the back exit. I can do the same.
Yes, but our guests can't. Not all of them.
Sir, our 4 kids are home.
I know, Dilip. Nobody is forcing you to stay. So, whoever wants to try and make it out, this is your time.
I'm sorry, sir.
Don't apologize. Many of you have wives, parents, families at home. There is no shame in leaving.
I've been here 35 years. This is my home.
I'm staying too. I'm staying too.
I'm with you, sir.
I'm with you, sir.
Me too.
Guest is gone, sir.
Hotel Mumbai stars Dev Patel, Armie Hammer, and Jason Isaacs, and it truly earns its R rating. It shows the brutality of the terrorists who kill without any regard for life. And the graphic depiction in this movie is why the film works so well. It feels so incredibly real, which makes the heroism even more impactful on the viewer. Critics who didn't like the film claim it's exploitative, and I suppose it is. But how exactly do you retell a story where so many people died without exploiting it just a little bit so that it actually works as a movie? We are better off knowing about these heroes and the events depicted in this movie, even if it means the film has to take some narrative licenses. This is a really, really difficult movie to sit through because of the violence, but it's a thriller that's meant to make you uneasy. The film is rich in detail. It's wonderfully acted. And it is appropriately brutal. The one downside in this film is they don't really explore the motivation behind the terrorists. We know that they are being guided by someone else that doesn't live in Mumbai, actually lives in Pakistan. In fact, that terrorist, the mastermind behind this, is still free. But it does show you how they ended up doing what they did, even if it's not really about the why. It's about the response from the people in the hotel. I really enjoyed Hotel Mumbai. Yes, it is in fact entertaining, which may make you feel bad, but it's a means to tell a story that, again, I think we're better off knowing. Hotel Mumbai is out now. It's very much rated R, and I very much recommend it. What movie are you going to see this weekend? Text me, 1-800-465-8770, 1-800-465-8770. That's a Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. The other film that's open this weekend is Dumbo, but it was directed by Tim Burton, who I don't like, so I didn't see it. Hotel Mumbai, go see it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Your health.
So this is kind of freaky. Police and hazmat folks responded to an incident near Green Lake earlier this morning. It happened around 9:30 a.m., just a little bit before 9:30, where a waste management worker was overpowered by something. Do you know what he was overpowered by? What's going on? What is this? Is this you?
It's not me.
I was in the middle.
Oh my god!
Well, oh my god! What's going on?
You got a little sturdy.
What is that in the distance?
Something in the mist.
It was mist.
Something in the mist. Damn. Cook John Lee.
The waste management guy's name is Tom Lee.
I could hear him screaming.
Oh my gosh.
Shut the doors!
Shut it!
The doors, my God!
No, you can't go home. There's mist!
Don't go out there. There's something in the mist. It took John Lee. Screw that. I'm getting to my car. Mister, no!
That dude should not have gotten to his car because he got eaten.
And that's audio from the scene.
Yeah, it was literally, I think that was taken from Cairo 7 TV.
Wow.
Yeah, missed. Police were called after a report of a person became overcome by an unidentified mist or an aerosol of some kind from a trash container. Como TV says a waste management worker was found at the scene overpowered by dust or vapor from a trash bin. The worker was taken to the hospital and is reported to be in stable condition. Hazmat workers gathered samples of the material and tentatively identified it as concrete dust. How does it overpower you? I mean, it's not healthy.
Yes, like a heart condition or a nose condition. And
a nose condition?
I don't know. I'm just, maybe.
You can just take a Claritin, man, a nose condition.
Yeah,
I think he has
allergies, probably.
Okay. Concrete dust is mildly caustic, which explains the worker's reaction to getting it in his eyes. So when I first saw waste management, of course, you automatically think of waste. But these are garbage men. People who are collecting some of the garbage are the people that we're talking about here. Yeah, so that's freaky. The second that I saw that mist was involved, immediately it goes to the movie The Mist, which I don't know if anyone's seen. Did you see it?
I'm kind of intrigued now. I kind of want to see it.
It was based on a Stephen King novella. They made it into a movie with the guy whose name I forgot and that actress from That Thing that I like.
Well, if Stephen King did it, it's going to be creepy.
And by the way, the kid who's in this movie, whose name I also forget, is from Tacoma.
Oh.
Just FYI.
So with it being a Stephen King novel first, is that what you said?
Novella.
Novella. What's the difference?
Novella is a short novel.
Oh, okay. I wonder if there's things they left out of the movie that were in the novel then. Because it's a Stephen King one. Because you know how they left a scene out that...
No.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't like scary movies. And I saw The Mist because I thought it was a movie about a spa. And it wasn't.
No.
And they all die in the end. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
That's mean. That's mean.
Come on.
That is mean. This is not foodie edition. Take that back. Apologize.
My bad.
Apologize. Say you're sorry. Seriously, say you're sorry. That's bad.
I feel like I've been set up.
Dickinson College in Pennsylvania might have removed signs promoting students take the stairs as a way to exercise because it possibly fat-shamed people. Now, to be fair, the reason why we chose Foodie Edition, we took the story from Campus Reform, which, because no one knows where Dickinson College is, and if you were to just show me a picture of the quad over at Dickinson, I wouldn't be able to clearly identify it. So they just had a stock picture of a fat girl eating a hamburger and fries with someone hanging over her head a salad, like, eat the salad. And so she's like, no, I'm going to eat the burger. And she's a sizable lady. So apparently the signs were deemed offensive. The sign said, why not take the stairs if you are physically able? The signs, at least one of which appeared by a campus elevator, asked the paper, according to this paper, by taking the stairs for two flights in lieu of the elevator, you will expend 15 to 20 calories. Sophomore Probleen Cower was not happy. Cower said, I began to feel guilty every time I took the elevator. They said, after taking the stairs and experiencing adverse effects, dizziness and difficulty breathing, she decided to get the administration involved. Along with the help of Amy Farrell, a women's gender and sexuality studies professor, and fellow student James Van Cullenberg. James says, these signs were effectively fat-shaming as they promoted weight loss as a positive thing. It has a negative impact on campus to have a series of signs that glorified a dangerous narrative that feeds into eating disorders. He would prefer that there would be less emphasis on dangerous social body expectations.
That's such a Van Cullenberg thing to say.
You know, I have a lot to say about this guy, none of which is appropriate for air. So I'm just going to put that out there and have you think about the horrible things I'm thinking about this loser who seems to think that it's healthy to be so overweight that going up one or two flights of stairs renders you dizzy and unable to breathe. That's not healthy, guys. That's not healthy.
You know, there's an argument to be made that fat shaming can actually work.
Foodie edition. That made me laugh. Who came up with that?
That was me. You're welcome.
You're a jerk. You're listening
to
the
me already.
Oh, shut up. It's the Jason Rant Show. Live from the Online Trading Academy studios, you are listening to the Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget, if you don't already have the app installed on your phone, please text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. Because if you did have the app on your phone, in fact, some of you are listening right now because of the app. We just sent out a alert. When we have important guests, when we have breaking news, any of the sort, we will send you alerts to make sure you're aware, to make sure you know what's going on. And this morning, I had the opportunity to talk with Howard Schultz. Howard Schultz is running for president. He hasn't officially announced, but everything that he says and how he says it makes it very clear that he is going to run. Now, he's going to be in an interesting spot. I tend to dismiss the concern from the DNC that he is going to be a significant issue for them in letting Trump win, depending on who they put into the candidacy, right? If they put in someone who's far, far, far to the left, Howard Schultz actually has a shot. If they put someone in who's more of a moderate, Howard Schultz has no shot whatsoever. But regardless, he is someone that a lot of people are talking about and a lot of people are expressing concern with. And so the point of this conversation, which we're going to do in two parts, we're going to play 10 minutes now, and we're going to do 10 minutes at 5:30. The whole intent of this is to get a better understanding of where he is. I'm not intending on debating him or yelling. I just want to get a feel for where he stands on the issues, because I'm told conservatives should consider Howard Schultz. With that in mind, we'll hear directly from him.
So the first question, of course, the most important question is Nitro. Is it actually being delivered to all of the Starbucks? Because the one down the block from me, it's not there yet.
It's coming. You know, I'm not involved day to day with Starbucks, but I read the same news you did. I was thrilled to see it because it's been such a big hit. And yeah, it's coming to every Starbucks store in the country.
Okay, so now that we got the corny joke out of the way, why not announce yet that you're running for president? Because obviously it seems like you're going down this path. You've been pretty open about it.
Well, I can't think of a more important, critical question to be answered on a personal level, family issues. Everyone's got to be aligned, and it's so vitally important for the country for the right person to be the next president of the United States, and that person should not be Donald Trump. I've taken a 8-week period now of traveling around the country. I'm going to continue to do that for the next couple of months. And you know, I said publicly 8 months ago, 8 weeks ago, I'd make a decision at the end of spring, early summer. Mm-hmm. I'm committed to that. I'm learning a lot from what I'm experiencing. I've basically been in a different city almost every other day in the last 8 weeks, and I feel like I'm in a good position to make the right decision, and I'll stick by that.
Family on board so far?
Yeah, my wife has been traveling with me most of the time. I think she's enjoyed it. Our kids are supportive, but this is a very, very big decision. And also, obviously, what I've decided to do is, if I proceed, I'm going to do it outside of the two-party system, because the two-party system is broken. It's corrupt. All these problems that we have right now, the national debt, the immigration, our tax policy, you know, one thing after another, these are not problems that have just occurred. These are problems that have been with us for a long time, that Democrats and Republicans and this president have not been willing to solve. And I think it's time for the American people to get honesty, truth, and most importantly, a level of civility and dignity and grace in terms of how we are leading this country and demonstrating to the American people how much we care about them.
So on immigration, Democrats, Republicans, we talk about this all the time, and literally nothing ever of substance gets done. Today, the president indicated that next week he might close down the border with Mexico if Mexico doesn't do enough to help stem the tide of illegal immigrants. So what's your reaction to that news?
You know, I read that, and it saddens me once again to see the veiled threats, the rhetoric, the lack of compassion, lack of empathy, and lack of respect for the Mexican people. This president, on a daily basis, it seems can't go 24 hours without insulting some group of people. I think it's outrageous.
So what would you do then? Because obviously there is a problem. Whether it's an emergency is obviously subjective, but there is a problem of people coming into this country illegally. There's also the problem of, you know, we haven't reformed the system, so people who we want to come into this country aren't able to come in the legal way within a reasonable amount of time.
We do have a problem with people who are illegal trying to cross the border. But let's understand something. One of the great aspects of America is people want to come here. And one of the historical aspects of our society is that we're all here because someone has come before us that have given us access to the American dream and the promise of the country. So the Republicans are correct that we need strict borders and we need background checks and we need verification. We have the technology and the resources to do that at the border. We also should be providing ICE with the tools, the resources, and the funding for them to do their job. So I agree with that. I also agree with the Democrats that the Dreamers should have a pathway to citizenship. Mm-hmm. That is the humane thing to do. I also think the 11 million people who are unauthorized, who are here, the majority of them are here because their visa expired. They should also be given a pathway to citizenship. And then the question is immigration as a whole. We are a country of immigrants. Immigrants has been a catalyst for growth, economic growth. We're struggling for economic growth right now. The president promised us 4 or 5% growth. Today in the newspaper, it was reported that we got 2, 2.5% growth. Where's the growth that he promised us? And so the immigration issue is if you got people in a room who were not steeped in the ideology and the extreme of both parties, and you just said, let's do the right thing. Let's enforce borders, give ICE the tools they need, pathway to citizenship, and provide legal immigration. We could solve this problem literally in less than an hour. However, here's the truth. The Republicans and the Democrats would rather have this as a political weapon that each one of them has so that neither side can get a political victory. Mm-hmm. And this has been going on for over a decade because President Bush and President Obama both submitted an immigration bill to the House at the time, but the opposition killed it. So this is a wonderful example to me of the proxy of the political problem we have and the unwillingness of both parties to do the right thing on behalf of the American people when, in fact, almost 80% of the American people polled consistently say we want a common sense solution to immigration. Why can't we get it?
It doesn't sound like your plan is fully different from what President Trump is saying, with the exception of the rhetoric around it.
Because that's not true. The president does not want to give access to the Dreamers. The president doesn't want to give.
He's put that on the table as a potential option.
No, let's putting it on the table as an option is his way of just throwing things against a wall that are falsehoods. If he wants an immigration bill passed, then let him come to the table with Nancy Pelosi, who also is equally complicit in all this, and say, this is how we're going to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. Strict border control, background checks, fund ICE, Dreamers get pathway to citizenship, the 11 million people who are unauthorized, let them get in line, pay a fee, pay back taxes, and let's have an immigration bill that's a catalyst for growth for the country.
So how would you negotiate that with Democrats and Republicans in that there are some on the left who say we don't want any money whatsoever going to ICE, that this is a terrorist organization? There's some extreme voices there.
I think this you've just identified the problem. The problem is that the extreme ideology on the Democratic side and the Republican side will not come together in the interest of the American people to compromise, collaborate, and co-author a bill that works for the American people. That is why I am strongly considering running for president outside of the two-party system. The two-party system, the $22 trillion debt, the immigration issue, our tax policy, our standing in the world, our problem with K-12, a healthcare system that doesn't work. Every one of these problems sits right in the middle of both parties' ideology and their unwillingness to solve this problem. These are problems that can be solved. I've spent the last almost 40 years in business creating opportunity and solving problems. That's what I've done my entire career. And that's what I would do if I run for president and am fortunate enough to be elected.
Do you think we have a gun problem?
Well, I think 40,000 people in America this year were killed in gun violence, the most in 50 years. However, the Second Amendment should be protected and preserved, but there should be, once again, a common sense solution in terms of gun legislation. And once again, 80% of the American people want to see common sense solution to this. We can't get it. And so, yes, we have a problem, but the problem should not in any way eradicate or do anything to the Second Amendment. Second Amendment needs to be preserved and protected for the right reasons. But should we have weapons of war in our society? I don't think so.
What's a weapon of war that's currently in our society? Because automatic weapons have been banned.
Weapon. A military weapon.
Like what?
AR-15 is a military weapon.
A semi-automatic?
I'm not an expert in militia, but a weapon of war. And what I would do is I would convene military experts on both sides of the aisle who understand this issue, who understand that we do have 40,000 people who were killed this year, more than in 50 years, more than any other developing country. So, yes, we have a problem. Let's convene a bipartisan group of people who are deeply committed without ideology mm-hmm. to try and solve this problem while protecting the Second Amendment.
So do you view that more, because when we say 40,000 people, two-thirds of that roughly are from suicides, and they're usually via handgun.
I'm not sure that's true.
In this country, the trend has certainly been over the last decade that the majority of the gun violence is via suicide. And that's why, you know, generally when we have this conversation, we say, is it about the gun or is it about mental health? It's clearly about both.
Well, I think we certainly have a mental health crisis in this country as well. But convening this group of people, I think, would consider all of that. But the question you ask is, do we have a problem with guns? It's not a question of whether or not we have a problem with guns, but clearly we have a problem if 40,000 Americans were killed this year in terms of gun violence. That is a problem that needs to be addressed. And the leader of the country, the President of the United States, has a moral obligation to bring both sides together to try and address it and to fix it. And I think if you are working on behalf of the American people, and that's the responsibility of the government and the elected officials, and the vast majority of Americans want to see a common sense solution to this mm-hmm. problem, then this is what we should be doing.
So that's my interview, part one with Howard Schultz, of course, of Starbucks fame. We also got into the conversation as to why a conservative might want to vote for him, because to me, he seems like a moderate Democrat. He's a moderate. He doesn't think he's a moderate Democrat, though. So we're going to get into that. We're going to play part two of that interview at 5:30. Of course, the podcast will have the full uninterrupted conversation between me and Howard Schultz. You can get that by texting the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770 or heading on over to ktth.com at 5:30. We will play part two of my interview, my sit down, my one-on-one with Howard Schultz. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Thank you for telling all your friends about the show. Happy Friday. Hope everyone has some fun weekend plans. I'm actually going to be doing a Q&A with the director of a film called Budapest Noir, part of the Seattle Jewish Film Festival. It's happening right now through the weekend. If you want to hang out with me tomorrow, see a movie that's pretty good, and then see me talk to the director afterwards. I promise it'll be just as good as the movie, because I'm quite charming. Go to SeattleJewishFilmFestival.org, and you can purchase your tickets for the event. The movie screening tomorrow is on Mercer Island, but throughout Seattle, they've got some films happening in the Seattle area, the Queen Anne area, and Mercer Island. So again, SeattleJewishFilmFestival.org. The name of the film is Budapest Noir. I'll be interviewing and doing a Q&A after the screening with the director, Eva Gardos. So we made mention in part one of the interview with Howard Schultz in that last segment that the president today indicated that he is going to at least stop either a part of the border, close up part of the border or the entire border with Mexico over Mexico's inability to control, to stem the tide of illegal immigrants coming into this country. And it's an interesting strategy that's not going to work. It's interesting in that when he tweets this out, it does start to change the conversation a little bit and at least focuses our attention on some of the things that can be done in Mexico that are not being done. But I do think it goes a little bit too far in setting up expectations. There's no doubt. There's no doubt whatsoever, as we have yet another caravan headed into Mexico towards the border. There's no doubt Mexican officials can be doing more. But the way that the president phrased his threat at the border, he's asking for too much, because we're not going to be able to count on Mexico to stop all of these people who want to come into this country. They're not doing it with Mexico's consent. The tweets continue by saying, Mexico has for many years made a fortune off of the U.S., far greater than border costs. If Mexico doesn't immediately stop all illegal immigration coming into the United States through our southern border, I will be closing the border or large sections of the border next week. This would be so easy for Mexico to do, but they just take our money and talk. Besides, we lose so much money with them, especially when you add in drug trafficking, etc., that the border closing would be a good thing. Now, a border you can close the border right now. You're not going to stop illegal immigrants from coming over the border. The president initially asking for better security, finishing the wall, patching up portions of the wall that make sense. That will help. That will help stem the tide. But it's not like these people are just walking in through the front door. They are going into spots that are generally difficult to police. And I'm not entirely sure I know what Mexico can do other than try to, once a caravan's already here, other than try to implement the law as it is on their end. And you're not always going to be able to stop everybody. So I don't know why we would want to just completely close the border, thinking that that somehow is going to change anything. All closing the border does, it stops American citizens or people who are traveling to the United States legally through Mexico, just means that they won't be able to come through. And it also means we wouldn't be able to go to Mexico. So you would just be punishing a whole bunch of American citizens, and you would be punishing a lot of cities that rely on some of the tax dollars that come with tourism from people going from Mexico into the United States. This isn't going to change anything. I'm glad he's bringing attention to the issue. The one thing, even though I tend to disagree a little bit with Howard Schultz and his position on immigration, I support the DACA program, so I guess there's that. But he's right to say Democrats and Republicans talk about this issue and then do absolutely nothing. This, for the first time in a while, feels like something might actually get done, because I think the president wants to get this done. But Republicans and Democrats always say, immigration is incredibly important. We got to focus on immigration. We got to make sure that we protect our border. But they don't actually do anything. And I think Howard Schultz is right when he says that part of the reason why no one does anything, and I think the Democrats lean on this way more than Republicans do, is they like to have victims that they can hold up and say, I'm fighting for them. These are victims because of the evil Republicans. These are victims because of the policy prescriptions coming from the White House. They're caging our kids. Like, that kind of rhetoric the left leans into, and they love it. That's why they don't want a quick deal on immigration that allows people who are here under a DACA protected status to go through. That's why they drag their feet. That's why they say we don't want any money going to a border or to ICE agents. Because they know that that, of course, is what Republicans will want. And I disagree with Howard Schultz on the point that President Trump doesn't actually want to legitimately negotiate on DACA. I think he does. I think he understands the only leverage that he has is the DACA recipients, and he has to use them as leverage because the Democrats are forcing our hands. The Democrats are totally forcing our hands on this. What else would we be able to negotiate with? If we want, for example, to get some significant funds going towards border security, whether that means building a wall or a barrier or a fence or metal slats, or whatever we want to call it, whether that means putting in place more judges to handle the influx of people who are trying to come here, whether that means better technology, more human being staff members, doesn't matter. The only way we're going to be able to get that is if we hold something over the heads of the Democrats that they claim to want. Now, they claim to want to protect DACA recipients. That's what they claim. That is what they want. And yet, they never actually move forward. And so I do start to wonder, what is a way that the president can start to renegotiate? What else is there for him to go up on? I would love it for him to just be able to say, you know what, I support the DACA kids. I'll just sign that without any sort of leverage. No deal. Don't need that. I'm just going to go ahead and do that because it's the right thing to do. But then where does that leave him on the other things that Democrats just won't budge on? Do you think it is a mainstream position Do you think it's legitimately a mainstream position to say, we don't want any dollars going towards the border? We don't want any dollars going towards ICE, this terrorist organization. Because that's what the Democrats are saying. And so in all of this, I listen to what Howard Schultz says. Do you have any, even let's say you generally like where Howard Schultz is on the topic of immigration. Do you think an independent would be able to do a better job bringing both sides together? What makes you think that? What makes you think Republicans who can't work with Democrats, Democrats who can't work with Republicans, what makes you think that you put in someone else who doesn't hear hold to the principles of either party? What makes you think they're going to have any change? 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. Don't forget, part two of the Howard Schultz interview between us will air at 5:30. We're going to talk about homelessness, the opioid crisis, and what, if anything, can he say to convince a Republican to vote for him? It's the Jason Rance Show.